Okay, so welcome back to this special edition of the Film Frequency Podcast. Myself and Mark are joined by our dear friend Alex, who was here before during our Oscar predictions video. And this is just a sort of follow-up based on the Oscars that have just occurred, the 94th Academy Awards that just came out. And we're going to be looking, trying to focus on the awards themselves, not too much on the controversy that's surrounding it. But naturally, I'm sure that's going to come up. But we'll just dive through our own predictions, how right we were, how wrong we were, and sort of what we can take away from the winners and losers of the night. But first of all, like the big winner of the night, with six different categories that it won in. So we have production design, sound, visual effects, original score, film editing, and also cinematography, went to Dune, which I don't think, judging from our own predictions, that is really a surprise at all. I think like you guys would both agree that this is probably a pretty stable on one from the get-go, right?
Yep. I'm very glad that Dune picked up as many as it did. And I am still a little surprised that it did do as well at the ceremony. I was even quite surprised at how many it was nominated for. It was nominated for about 10, I think. It was maybe the most nominated as well as picking up the most. And I was saying before that in our last podcast for the Oscars last year that the type of film that Dune is, like a large spectacle type film or a large epic, Hollywood doesn't really make anymore. Hollywood's very careful with how much money they spend on films these days, and I don't think they take the risks on these massive budget films that they don't know if the audiences are going to show up for. And it was really, really nice to see the Academy get behind this, because it is, I would say, one of the very best epics that we've had in recent years. And hopefully this will pave the way for other big epics to be made after this. I really hope, Hollywood learns from it. And actually, earlier on, I was just taking a look at, there was a, I saw that there was the top 10 highest grossing Best Picture nominations for the last 10 years. So they were Black Panther, American Sniper, Joker, Gravity, The Martian, Bohemian Rhapsody, A Star is Born, Dunkirk, and The Revenant, and Lincoln. And really, when you look at all 10 of those, apart from maybe The Revenant, I would say none of them were front runners to win the Best Picture. And I don't, Dune was the same here. And it'd be really nice to see a film like Dune or another epic be able to be in for the running for really Best Picture. I know it was kind of nominated for it, but I think it would be nice to see them go for some of the very big categories again, like some of the previous epics have done.
Yeah, you mentioned that they had the most nominations. It actually had the second most nominations. We're right on 10. Power of the Dog had 12, but even then, Dune was expected to have more nominations than it actually did. It missed out on Best Director, and I think a lot of people considered it a lock for Best Director. You can tell what Denis Villeneuve did in the film was incredible. I mean, the fact that it has so many technical nominations all down the line, you can tell it's just an incredible effort on every front to create what they've created, epic, as you said. So it is really nice to see it be nominated for as much, and especially to win as much as it did, because there's maybe a couple you could argue maybe another film should have won, but you know, at least four of those six, you know, there's absolutely nothing you'll see better. Like production design, as you say, it looks beautiful. Every set's incredible. Yeah, it's a good winner.
I actually thought as well that on the note that Denis Villeneuve wasn't nominated for Best Director, I think someone came up with this or highlighted the statistic that I think the last time an Oscar film had 10 nominations and didn't have a director, its director nominated for it, it was like 49 years ago or something like that there, something really crazy. So yeah, definitely seems like he was a bit shunned from this category based on how many other nominations the film got.
Yeah, like I think we can all agree, like whatever you take from that movie, it was stunning in every sort of aspect of it. And it was just a very technically well-made film. So I was happy to see it do the well. Then I think we come on to the music for the night. So we have, like I said, Dune ended up taking home the best original score, but the best original song, another one I think was fairly obvious. I say obvious, I guess something else. But this is the song from No Time to Die, which is the Bond one. And this, I mean, generally you tend to find that the Bond movies, whenever they are up that year, they do tend to go well. So the song, this is the song is literally called No Time to Die, and it's by Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas O'Connell. Pretty obvious one, I guess. You weren't really sort of expecting. It was, I guess, a lot of people said Encanto, but it wasn't like the main sort of popular song from that movie that went up. It was Dos Orguitas, which I don't even remember from the movie, but I like it's the one about Bruno that everyone was sort of. We don't talk about Bruno. That's the one that they should have put up. They might have actually had a better chance.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda as well was the one who wrote it, and there's like a lot of theater people very big into their EGOT.
Would he have got the EGOT if he had won this? Yeah.
Yeah. If he'd won that, he would have. And apparently, they didn't submit. We don't talk about Bruno. They submitted the other one, Dos Orguitas, I think. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot there, because if they had the most popular song of the year, the one that's topping charts everywhere, they would have got it easy.
Yeah. I think it was because it hadn't really caught fire, the film and its soundtrack, until after they had submitted their track. But like, I mean, you said, Ross, you couldn't even remember that song. It seems like a no-brainer. You could at least go for one of the bigger. I mean, there was not just. It wasn't just We Don't Talk About Bruno. There was another couple of songs that were also kind of hits that kind of came up the charts along with it. So I'm surprised someone
If you think back to like whenever like Disney were going pumping out all their sort of mega musical hits, and the one was Let It Go from Frozen. That was what, 2013, 2014? And that was like, I remember that being everywhere. Everywhere, and there was no way anything else was even coming close to that. And but again, it's sort of like I said, in other years, like Adele won for Skyfall, and Sam Smith won the year that he did one. And do you know what I mean? It's like whenever it's a Bond movie, it's almost like this sort of untouchable thing that they can't really. So it was, I guess, it was always probably going to head that way. But it is, you're right. It's a bit of a shame they shot themselves in the foot a wee bit with that. Yeah, so then after the music, we sort of come on to a category that's really sort of become quite big in recent years. It used to be one that was sort of like almost shuffled off to the back. And personally, it's one of my favorite categories every year, and that's the international feature film. Now, this, again, I think the one that everyone sort of predicted would get this, which was Drive My Car, which is the Japanese one. Have either of you two seen that?
Yes, I saw it in the cinema. It's one of the best cinema experiences I've had, weirdly. It was just everyone, in 3 hours for a film about grief, everyone was just sitting there in complete silence, didn't see anyone move. It was ridiculous, and it's a phenomenal film.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate long films, but that's an easy one to sit through.
What's it about, Alex?
In the broadest terms possible, it's about a grieving man who... is a theater director, and he's hired to produce an international play of Uncle Vanya. And in order to cover themselves for insurance, they hire this woman to drive him about. That's just about their interactions as the two of them, both grieving, kind of learn from each other as to how to get over their, you know, their difficult times, and how they're both like far too controlling. But like, spread over 3 hours. I mean, like, there's a 40-minute prologue to it that's just about the main character and his wife, like many years before. So it's really relaxed, and it just tells this really big story that's just about people grieving, and it's beautiful. Really, it's a really deserving winner.
It's based. Yeah. I'm looking here. It's based on a Murakami short story.
Yeah.
My flatmate's obsessed with Murakami, so I have books of it everywhere.
Yeah.
So I could picture it being pretty bleak.
Yeah. It's pretty surreal. It's weirdly, it's not that bleak. It's quite uplifting. It's very cathartic. I will say this as well. That was a really, really strong field. I mean, you've got there were 4 foreign language films got nominated for multiple awards this year. That's never happened before. You got Drive My Car was up for 4, Flea was up for 3, Worst Person in the World, and Parallel Mothers, which wasn't even nominated for, it wasn't even submitted by Spain for international feature. Like, they're all up for 2 as well. So it's Yeah, it's something we'll go on to later on, but it's pretty interesting that a lot of the nominations were pretty international, and then a lot of the wins wound up being pretty like American.
It's sort of, I guess it's a nice indicator of the way things are sort of shifting, but it's maybe they just haven't quite fully
Yeah.
moved over yet. And it's like, I mean, whenever I think the big game changer for that was a couple of years ago, whenever Parasite won the Best Picture,
Yeah.
I think that
And
was
then
that
like
opened the door, you
Yeah, and
know?
then the next year, in between those 2 years, you had Minari was a big hitter as
Yeah,
well,
that's
being
true.
Korean language. So it's nice that these films are getting more of a chance. It's maybe hopeful that they might get more of a chance to actually win other awards, but like Parasite did, but we live to see.
The worst person in the world was it's obviously it's a Norwegian movie, and it's really there's a big push for that here for an awful lot of people. So it's yeah, no, it's really nice just to see a bit more diversity in these things. Best animated picture. Now, like I said, with the music, when it tends to be like a Bond movie's up, you generally tend to find that whenever it's best picture, best animated picture, that generally it's a Disney movie that's always one of the front runners. And in this case, we've got, do you know what I mean? No big surprise here than Encanto. I know Corey will be quite upset about this, and I'll be honest, I'm a little bit sad about it myself that Mitchell's and the versus the Machines didn't quite sneak through, because I think that's an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah,
But
I was gonna say I'm grumpy that like I'm grumpy that three of them didn't win because I think they're, I mean, Rey and the Last Dragon was a bit of an outlier, but each of the other four spent the time as a front runner. So like, start off Mitchell's versus the Machines, ah, it's not gonna lose it. Then Luca came out, people are like,
yeah.
oh, and then Flea sort of was a real outlier, being completely different from the others, and people were like, oh, maybe this could do it, and I thought maybe it might, and then Encanto was just too big, really.
And just on the note of Encanto, weren't you saying that if they had have won the original song, that would have meant that Lin-Manuel Miranda would have ended up becoming an EGOT? Is that
Yes.
correct? So
So
he's
it's
missed out on that one. But at least he got it for the animated feature film, because I think he wrote, or did he just write the music for the
he was
film?
just the music for that.
Okay. Well, I'm sure, you know, he's quite young. I'm sure he'll be back for to try and get that, to join that elusive club at some point later in the future. Also, with the animated feature, did anyone actually see Luca? Because I the reviews for it were very mixed. Some people said it was one of the very weakest of Pixar's films. Other people, as I said, it ended up becoming Oscar nominated,
I
and some
think the
people really found
problem,
beloved it.
I think I could see the problem people would have with it, in the sense that for a Pixar movie, there's not an awful lot that happens in it. You know, it's a very sort of, there's no sort of really big stakes involved in it. It's just a couple of wee lads that want to win a Vespa. Like, so they're trying to win this bike race so they could get the money for this Vespa. And like, that's the whole thing. But it's just, it's a really, I don't know, I just, it's a really nice little movie that sort of, it sort of really encapsulates those like sort of summer days you spend whenever you're a kid, just, you know what I mean, just mucking about in the garden and not really having a care in the world and all the rest of it. When also it's got like this twist of them being like these mer people as well. Yeah.
Yeah, plus I mean there's like what's pretty weird as well is that of three of those animated films nominated this year all featured LGBT themes within them as well, between Luca, which was the writers said they didn't actually plan for it, but it was like taken by the community a little
Yeah.
bit. And then Mitchell's versus the Machines and Flea follow gay characters, or so you know, that's just want to throw that in there, considering Disney won it in the end. You're notoriously famous for being really great to their LGBT fans. Really great.
Oh, the House of Mouse. It's we're all slaves to it eventually, unfortunately.
We're still fighting
No, but
against
we'll yeah. Then I
it.
think we're going to go on to the best original screenplay. I guess we can't not talk about this, being that it's based on a movie from where we're from, Belfast. Now, again, we all sort of were pretty fast about this, except for Corey again, who went for something else. This movie was always going to pick up something. There was too much buzz around it for it to get nothing. But the fact that, wasn't this the only thing it picked up? This was
Yeah.
the only award.
Yeah, and I think it was the only one it had any chance at as well, really. Yeah.
Which is surprising because it was the front runner. Again, it goes to show what's happening with the Oscars. I don't know, maybe because I didn't focus as much on the Oscar race in years gone by, but I don't remember this kind of... It really is like an Oscar wave of popularity, and if you don't manage to time your wave of popularity with the actual Oscar votes when they come out, mm-hmm. then that can be everything. That can be your make or break moment for your film. And clearly, you know, Belfast and West Side Story, they were the front runners back in December. But even from what the last few years have ended up, you could tell that I was already kind of cautiously apprehensive for them both, because I knew that was peaking too early. If your Oscars are in March, there's probably going to be another couple of films that come in and sneak up the inside.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's all about momentum, really. It's quite weird that this year and last year were a little bit different. Usually there's a front runner at the start, and then everyone forgets about it. Think like The Irishman or Star Is Born, that just everyone forgets about.
Why is there these waves of popularity? Why can't everyone remember something that they watched 2 months ago?
Well, to be honest, a lot is just kind of tiredness from exposure, you'd say. I mean, last year was a bit weird. Nomadland sort of rode that wave from the start to the end. It was a real outlier. But I mean, we'll get onto this later, of course, but apparently there is big pushes for Power of the Dog and Belfast and West Side Story for you know, like billboards and ads and trying to get people to vote for them. There's such publicity about them that smaller films kind of came up towards the end and snuck in. So there's a lot of things like Belfast winning original screenplay. That's essentially it seems more like a consolation prize.
Yeah,
it's bad to say that, but I mean, Belfast is Branagh's film, really. So that's the way to award Branagh without awarding the film.
And also, I think Branagh has been nominated, I think, maybe 8 times over his career, and he finally got an Oscar. So I'm glad to see that. I think if anyone has managed to be, you know, nominated, doing projects and being that successful that many times, I think at that point you're like, okay, you can have an award.
Yeah.
Just a bit like Leonardo DiCaprio the other year, and a bit like Will Smith, I guess, this year, but we'll get into him.
It did feel an awful lot like this was the year that an awful lot of people were getting sort of like recognition Oscars, not necessarily for the portrayal that they had this year, but more like you can name a whole bunch of these people that it's like, okay, you technically probably should have got this at another point, so we'll give this to you.
Old saying, you win the right person wins for the wrong film. That's how it goes, and like you're going to see a lot of that once we get further into the nominees. But I mean, even with the original screenplay, that was actually one of the three seriously open races that anyone could have won. And it is kind of funny that it goes to Branagh in the end, because I mean, he's been 8 times nominated, 7 different categories nominated in. It's like, you know, there are a few other people who hadn't really been nominated before and thought, oh, could they do it? Nope, it's going to go for the guy who maybe should have got it a while back.
Yeah, but for something totally different, like an acting. Because, I mean, that was what he was to begin with in his career. Same thing with Ben Affleck. He ended up getting it for directing as well, or you know, for making the film himself.
Yeah, he won. He actually won one when he was like 21 or something. Crazy.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah,
it's Google Hunting. Yeah, we talked about that, actually. I listened to some of the speeches, by the way, at the end, and Branagh's, I think, was maybe my favourite out of all the speeches. It was very professional. It was very clean and authentic and articulate, I guess. And I still feel bad, which we'll get into as we move towards Best Actor.
But I don't know. I really enjoyed the pure raw emotion of Will Smith's speech of the night. I just think he really put his heart in the line.
You know,
I'm going to throw in my pick for best speech just because we're going here. Hamaguchi, who got cut off after 10 seconds and then waved his finger, was like, no, and then carried on for another 5.
God. Right. So then we'll move on now we'll start going into the acting. First of all, we're going to start off with the actress in a supporting role, and that went to Ariana DeBose. And again, this was another one that was pretty locked in for quite a while. I think everyone was sort of pretty convinced that this was going to happen. And there was talk about Judi Dench, obviously, as the Belfast and Granny, which would have been an absolute fucking travesty if she had won that. But I don't know. Did either of you see West Side Story in the end?
I watched it. I think one of the very, very few people in Europe to have ever seen it, considering it just wasn't out. Sorry. But if I'm being honest, she's really good. She's really... Oh, nice.
She
but
is.
Also... I could name maybe like, oh, I was going to be really bad. I was going to say you can name four people better than her in that category. There is only four. But no, she is really good, but you kind of like, you'll notice this with the acting winners. It's like, what's going to win? Is it the big bombastic performance like Ariana DeBose dancing and going really for it? Or is it like a quieter one like Kirsten Dunst or Jesse Buckley or Anjanue Ellis? Where it's really understated and really nuanced, and they kind of go for the really big one. And I think I'd maybe disagree with every one of the acting winners, even if I'm happy for good, well, if I'm happy for three out of four of them.
But you're going to state a name that shall not be named yet.
He shall not be named yet, no.
I saw this film. You actually called me out on the Oscar prediction podcast, Alex, for I'm about the only one that I think anyone's aware of that actually watched this in a cinema. And I watched it with my girlfriend, and I mean, it wasn't a film I really liked. I'd never saw the original. I was taken back by how many of the soundtrack or how many of the songs were iconic songs that I just never knew stemmed from the original one.
Like four or five
absolute classics. Yeah. I couldn't get over
it.
I Feel Pretty. Yeah, that one there. I was like, is that not like The King and I or something? I was really surprised that came from that film. And I do think she was excellent in it. She was very magnetic. And I think her, you know...
Yeah.
America. She had that one. She had some of the very big dance moments of the whole thing, the very, very big moments. So I think that probably helped her get nominated.
She was also really, really good, I remember, in like the, I mean, for, there is a, well, not without spoiling West Side Story, like as if no one's ever seen it before. There's a bit at the end of the movie where something, there is a tragedy that happens and people do die. And she has this great scene with Maria, sort of the main character in the movie. And she plays that very, very well. Like she does, like sort of like holding in the grief that of something that's just happened to her. And the actual dramatic performance in that particular part of the movie, I think is very, very good as well. So it is, you're right, it's all like the la, 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 and all that sort of stuff. But there is like she actually has like a proper dramatic performance to her as well.
No, she is very good.
I was just going to make a point that she actually won for playing Anita, and I think this is maybe the only time someone has won an Oscar, a second person has won an Oscar for playing the exact same character, basically.
I was going to say weirdly it's the first time it's happened where the character isn't the Joker.
Yes, I think the Joker's the only other one.
Yeah.
But the
Joker was Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor, wasn't it? Or no, was...
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was two separate Oscars then. Yeah. So this is the first time that I think someone has won for the same character for the exact same Oscar of Best Supporting Actress.
Yes, that's true. I think there's also, was it Vito Corleone in Godfather and Godfather 2?
Maybe not. Maybe just female. I don't know.
But what's also interesting as well is that Rita Moreno, who won this the last time, she's actually in the movie as well. She plays like sort of the wee old shopkeeper, and she has like a little. So it's kind of nice. There's like a passing of the torch that's going on there as well, which is kind of cool. Then we're gonna move on to actor in a supporting role. This is another one that was apparently locked down by everyone apart from me, which was Troy Kotsur. Is he the first deaf actor to win the award?
Male deaf actor. His co-star Marley Matlin, who's also weirdly the youngest ever Best Actress winner, but she won back in the late 80s, I think. Troy Kotsur, he's a very, very popular winner for this. Obviously, his speeches throughout the entire Oscars season, well, the entire awards season, have been just really magnetic, is a word you used earlier. But you couldn't help root for him to win. He was another one who didn't start out as the favorite and just slowly built as the award season went along. I mean, the first time he won an award, he gave a great speech, and then he did another and another. And I think the original favorite was Cody Smith McPhee, who again does like such an incredible performance, like really, really nuanced in The Power of the Dog. I think it's actually my favorite performance of the entire year. But at the same time, Kotzer does something close to it, but which has just a bit more energy about it, just draws you in a bit more, rather than something that feels a little bit colder and a bit more something that you'd have to dissect.
Yeah. What did you think of Power of the Dog? Because I actually watched this on Saturday, because at that point I thought it was going to win the Best Picture Award. And I knew going in, I could tell from the trailer, I could tell from what was being said about it, that it wasn't my type of film. I don't like Westerns, and I don't like certainly slow burn Westerns. And I just didn't buy Benedict Cumberbatch as a cowboy, like a badass cowboy, which also didn't help when I was watching the film. But what did you think of it? I think Alex has seen it, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I was going to say this will be something quite good to mention for Best Picture, but on Benedict Cumberbatch, I'll just throw out there that he's, I think that's one of the things I quite like about it, is that you don't really buy him as a cowboy. His whole sort of persona is that he's putting everything on, so not buying him as the guy that he's trying to be is like quite a,
it's actually quite
a nice thing. Yeah. It's good getting like soft-spoken English guy to go and do that.
I think it's because I knew, like, I didn't buy him in the, because obviously actors are meant to be able to embody a character, but I didn't feel like that with him. And I don't know if that is part of, because obviously, not to reveal too much about Part of the Dog, but there's more of a history to him of secrets that he's keeping. And therefore, maybe that was why they cast him as the cowboy in the film. But I remember, within 10 minutes of sitting down, and I was listening to someone else. I think it was someone in, I was saying to you, Ross, it's someone who's in a lot of old Westerns. The guy with the grey moustache and the grey hair and the very thick brawl. Sam Elliott was kind of saying that the cowboys in this film look like they're from Chippendales. And then when I actually watched it, I was like, oh my goodness, he's so right. Because all of them around Benedict Cumberbatch, all of them are like clean shaven, like, as I said, like models out of Hollister or something like that. Like, they all just seemed like they were literally plucked from modern day and like put down at a table, and that was meant to be them in this 18th century ranch in the middle of nowhere.
There's some really great readings on Power of the Dog explicitly about that, and I can't go into too much detail there because I'll talk forever, but one of the things was like the costume designers discussing what cowboys actually wore and what they wore in cinema. And one of the earliest big cowboy actors and filmmakers, he wasn't a cowboy. He didn't come from the Midwest. He came from the Northeast of America and sort of said, oh yeah, I have all this experience. And he'd go in and he'd tell them how the cowboys live their lives and what it would be. And the iconography of the neckerchief is even from him, because he wanted to wear it because he thought it made him look badass. That's like, that was never something that you'd ever see a cowboy wear. So it's a lot of it is like
cliches.
Yeah, it's like so much.
A lot of our perception of cowboys is basically what movies have told us.
Yeah,
so
it's like trying to preen, essentially. It's like peacocking. They're all trying to show, this is like what masculinity is. This is what cowboys are meant to look like. This is what the rough and tumble lifestyle is meant to look like. And then you go on 100 years and you've got someone subverting it quite neatly, I thought, like in showing exactly what it is, but pushing it to a limit where you kind of think like, well, they do look a bit ridiculous. They do look like the Chippendales, as you say, because that's what essentially Hollywood did to cowboys. They were like, this is what they are.
Well, they lived a pretty clean, clean looking lifestyle, if that's what cowboys did look like, I guess, because they it just threw me out of it. And then the film as a whole, it wasn't my type of film. It was just too drawn out, very little story. Like, if you look at that as a script, I'm often thinking, flip, that's all you've got, that's a film that we're gonna make. You know, I would have thought that would have been the type of film that you'd look at the script and go, we're not making that, there's not enough here, basically. I know it's very subtle. I do get the subtleties, but I think, I just think, I don't know, there just wasn't enough to me to make the film worthwhile.
This is going to be a big thing. I'm going to fight you on this, Mark. Not really, but yeah, you're right about it being subtle. A lot of it is subtext, and it's kind of, it's one with the sting of steel. Obviously, we both know what happens in the end and how the film builds that. I think it's actually like quite built for a rewatch for that, because a lot of what is set up is really deceptive and very kind of, a lot of the story is hidden for the sake that the ending, for the sake of the ending. And I appreciate that. I thought it was a pretty good screenplay.
Yeah, so then I think we'll move on to some of the bigger awards of the night. And we're going to start off with an actress in a leading role. Now, we had quite a mixed guess with this across the board whenever we tried to predict this earlier on. And it was only Mark, you were the only one who actually picked it up there with Jessica Chastain, who ended up taking this away. Now, we were having a discussion there about a number of people who've been nominated previously. And Mark, you think a big part, you were saying before about the fact that she is sort of almost within the club, and you think that might have had a part to this?
Yeah, she was within the Weinstein Club.
I don't even know.
He who must not be named.
We're with a few of those tonight. I mean, she'd been spotted quite a few times in and around Harvey Weinstein. I think she's been in quite a few of his films. But I mean, to be fair, everyone in Hollywood had some sort of connection to him at some point or other, you know, yeah. Especially if you were female.
Willing or not.
But yeah, I think with this one here, I initially had Nicole Kidman down as my prediction. I haven't seen any of these films apart from Kirsten Stewart. Kirsten Dunst. She was supporting. Never mind. But yeah, I haven't seen any of these actresses' films. But I originally went for Nicole Kidman just because she's kind of beloved in Hollywood. She's kind of had a resurgence over the last couple of years on TV and film. She seems to be doing an awful lot. But then I swapped it to Jessica Chastain because from previous Oscars, you can see that Oscars like to be quite democratic and spread out the love. And Jessica Chastain's never won before, but she's been about for quite some time. So I felt like it was her time to win one.
Yeah, she actually sort of, it was a very open race, but she was definitely the favorite for it by virtue of, I mean, maybe she should have won an award a decade before for Zero Dark Thirty. So we've got the overdue narrative.
Yeah.
She was also the producer on The Eyes of Tammy Faye and was the person pushing to get it made. And so there's like that aspect to it, a little bit like Frances McDormand last year with Nomadland. She was one of the key creative forces. And it's an interesting one because I actually put down Penelope Cruz just because I'd heard that her PR people were the same as Anthony Hopkins from last year. And I thought, well, okay, if they can get Anthony Hopkins to beat Chadwick Boseman, they can get Penelope Cruz to beat Chastain. But yeah, it's an interesting winner. Again, it's one of these ones where you kind of like, you maybe look at someone like Cruz, someone like Coleman, who give more subtle performances, and then you've got Chastain, who's doing a lot of really good dramatic stuff, but it's also the showiest. And there you got like three in a row of the acting winners who are all like quite showy roles, ones that people will immediately remember. And I'm happy for each of those winners. It's just it's kind of expected in a way. No great surprises.
I'm in the same way that I'm very happy that besides what happened with the Batman, I'm very happy that Robert Pattinson has been able to sort of integrate himself back into the mainstream or back into like sort of critical success. Mm-hmm. After his interesting start, shall we say, with the Twilight movies. I'm very happy that Kristen Stewart wasn't sort of left out in the wasteland as well, because her performance as Diana is really, really really, really good. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm just happy that she sort of is back in the conversation.
I'm surprised again, had her down as your favorite to win Best Actress she was infamously not included in, was it the Critics' Choice Award?
It was every award. every award. It was like after the Golden Globes, I think, nominated her and then didn't reward her. It was like she was like runaway favorite. Everyone was like, yeah, no, nobody can beat her. And it's like nobody nominated her.
We totally forgot to even nominate her. Maybe everyone thought, nah, I'll vote for someone else because everyone is going to vote for Kirsten Stewart, and then no one did vote for her. But yeah, if she just barely made the Oscars nominations, I was like, there's no way she's going to win that. If she just about got the nomination.
I think it's about time to address the elephant in the room. That's probably the greatest thing that's happened to the Oscars in many a year.
That's literally what Chris Rock said. Isn't that quoted from him himself?
Yeah, to quote the recipient of the slap heard around the world, that is the greatest night in television. Before we come on to his conduct for the evening, have you guys seen King Richard? Alex, I see you put it down here. Have you seen
so it? I'm just gonna, I will say this, but in a film called King Richard, where Richard Williams is the character who's on screen for nearly every second of the film, and where there's four main cast in it, he is about the fourth best member of that cast. No, he does a good job.
These are brave words to say whenever he's not like 2 or 3 feet away from you. So carry on.
Okay. I'm behind the screen. I can say whatever I want. Good. Honestly, you see like what the young girls did, and like the fact that the girl who plays Venus Williams, she learned how to play tennis right-handed to look exactly like Venus Williams. She's left-handed. Like the fact that she's doing that, and then everyone's just like, oh, that's a good performance, that's cute. And then you got Anjanou Ellis doing acting circles around everyone there, and
so she was phenomenal.
Yeah. And then like Will Smith, he's like, do you wonder whether or not he can still play normal people? Because I mean, I get Richard Williams isn't necessarily a normal person. He did incredible things. He's one of the sort of most famous coaching success stories you've ever got. But it's almost like whenever you watch the interviews at the end of the film with the real Richard Williams, you kind of like realize that it's almost like, I don't know, Will Smith is going a little bit too much. He's like, he doesn't have the same vibe. He's almost like he's trying to Forrest Gump up Richard Williams, which I thought was a little bit weird. I was like, no, this is more like, again, another sort of like showy performance. And you're like, okay, it's good. It's nuanced. It's the best Will Smith's ever been. But at the same time, you sort of think like, but it's not really...
But is it the best Will Smith has ever been? Like, genuinely, do you think this is the best? Because this is sort of the general theme of this episode is guests, this narrative of like people getting things they should have deserved a while ago. I think like The Pursuit of Happiness, I think he was an awful lot better than he was in this. Mm-hmm. Personally,
I have not seen it or Ali, so I probably am not qualified to make that comment. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, I do think also a big element, you're saying, Ross, about giving it to Oscars or giving Oscars to people who should have got it prior to that, and almost like a making up type Oscar. I do think also, so obviously the Oscar ratings have suffered an awful lot over the last decade. And I think part of it to try and draw people back is start rewarding your big Hollywood actors again. Whereas I think... You know, and I think there's a lot of merit to say about these smaller actors that were never going to be given a platform in the first place are the ones that are able to win. But I think it's nice to also, I don't know, maybe it's because I grew up with the Oscars like that, but it's nice to reward actors that have been in my life for years and years and years to be able to say finally they got an Oscar, if that makes sense. So
yeah, I mean, that's what the acting wins essentially were. You've got Troy Kotsur and Ariana DeBose who weren't really on anyone's radar before this year, and suddenly they've come through and they're like fantastic ambassadors for cinema. Each of them are like incredibly diverse people, and they're able to share these experiences in a way that not many other people can. And then you've got Jessica Chastain and Will Smith like winning for their third nomination after a long career. Sorry, Ross.
And then there's a certain, there's definitely a certain one of those people that there's definitely a very big discussion going on at the minute whether he is an ambassador for acting or not. I mean, certainly if you go based on his acceptance speech alone, he's doing every single emotion known to man in that. Jesus.
Shall we talk about it?
Yes, I think we'll have to because we can't not talk about it. I think so. I will go. I'm not one of these people who religiously watches this like live because I have a job. And I woke up the next day and I like saw the headline. And I woke up the next day and I saw the headline and I saw like the still and I was like, oh, for God's sake, this is some sort of skit. And even whenever I watched it initially, I was just like, Christ, okay, here we go. Like Will Smith, even because this is before the best actor has been announced, right? This is prior to, that's the whole point, it's prior to that happening. And I'm thinking like, he has to make the entire night about him, even if he's not going to win the actor, which everyone thought he was going to. But even if he doesn't win the actor, he's going to make this all about him with this special little bit about him and Chris Rock. And then the more you sort of watch it and you look at it, and for me, the actual assault that occurred, it wasn't, that was bad enough. The fact he then went and sat down, it's that coupled with like his sort of like this bravado that he's where he screams at him when he gets down off the stage. That was the bit where I was just like, you're just a massive dickhead. And my people who've listened to the podcast before, we did a Will Smith episode like a while back, and you've heard my thoughts about his family, in particular his children. I have a ton of thoughts when it comes to his wife and their marriage and everything else. And do you know what, we're a film podcast, so it's not relevant to bring that sort of stuff up here. But for such a long time, everyone said this, he had this very strange and bizarre sort of personal life that was going on, and very sort of like just these weird values and everything. But you always got the impression that he was just a nice guy that was going through, like, was just a really nice, generally a nice person in Hollywood, and was like, wasn't being dragged into all the bullshit with his son, who just all that, don't even get me started on that wee lad. But like, I, for the entire time, I was like, God love him. He's stuck with him. They're his family. You can't get to choose your family. Like, they are what they are. And it just it fell apart. All of it fell apart with that just one scene. Cause I was like, if it was fake, it is him sort of, like I said, turning all the attention back onto him and everything like that. And if it's not fake, which I think we generally came to perceive now, is that it wasn't fake. It's toxic masculinity in the finest, most refined sense. Cause it's like, I have to turn around and show you all what a man and what a lad I am. And I understand why he thinks that way. Cause obviously what's going on, but like I don't understand how anyone can defend that. I really don't. And the fact he then stands up and apologizes to everyone in the room, apart from the man he just smacked the bake off. I don't get this. I just don't understand it. I don't get it.
Do you think part of
I just will say about his speech as well, because I mean, one of the things he actually says in his speech was about how he said, I was just doing it, you know, he kind of compared himself to Richard
disgusting.
Williams.
That was one of his publicists that came up and be like, right, Will, this is how we're spinning this. You're going to turn this into a thing. I'm like, oh, I'm like the crazy dad they said I was. Shut up, Will.
But like, as well, Richard Williams is like, his entire thing is that he taught those girls humility. Like, he always said, never rise up, never be, you know, if someone's going to drag you down to the floor, you do not go to their level. He taught them, act with respect, act with humility. I mean, the fact that he says, oh yeah, Richard Williams would have done this for his family. Richard Williams endured some of the worst, most racist, horrifying verbal abuse, psychological abuse you could possibly have from both the media and from the crowds. And what happens, he then has, you know, a film made about him, a guy do this and then compare himself to that. I think even Richard Williams has made a statement kind of saying, I do not condone this in any way. So that's what annoyed me a lot. And also, I mean, he said it's toxic masculinity, like defined into its perfect source. I mean, literally, he stood up to defend his woman, as some people say, which is just bullshit, really. And
it was his ego. It was all his ego. That was all that was about.
I mean, the man's never heard of heckling. I'm assuming if that's like his first reaction is to walk up and punch someone. I mean, it's weird. I don't defend Chris Rock's joke. I'll say that. I mean, it's a bit low to make fun of like a medical condition. That's not right. And it is kind of interesting to see a comedian say something controversial and get an immediate response, immediate consequences for saying something controversial. But yeah, it's messy. It's messy. And I will say this: did you both? Neither of you watched the broadcast, did you at all?
No.
I sat through it. Mate and mine. We decided we were going to watch it, and we had to bail because it was just a bit of a mess. I mean, it was just messily constructed. They'd cut out eight awards. That, I mean, that controversy you could talk about for an entire podcast itself. And then you end up watching it and you realize, oh, right, this is going to be like 4 hours long, which it was in the end. And all the awards that they're giving out are for kind of people that you question whether or not they should have won or if they're going to win. And then the ones that you're like, wow, that's really deserving. They weren't shown. They were edited and stitched into the program. And then they had some absolutely baffling things as well, like getting Mila Kunis to turn up. Again, Mila Kunis, whose origins are from Ukraine, she came up and she talked about the crisis in Ukraine as a way to introduce one of the best original songs. So that was like what they used a Ukrainian for. They said to her, here, you know, bring up the best songs that we can have someone sing for 4 minutes.
Yeah, it's really insensitive.
Wasn't
Zelensky supposed to do like a spot or something on it, and then they took that out?
It was Amy Schumer asked him to, and then the producers were like, "No, I think he's got better things to do."
If Amy Schumer asked me to do anything, I would say no. But
what did you think of the hosts, Alex? Because I heard I heard a few of their jokes, and they sounded terrible. Like it just felt like it all fell flat.
Weirdly, Amy Schumer was surprisingly good. I'm not an Amy Schumer fan myself. Outside of she was in a film last year called The Humans, and she was surprisingly incredible in it. But her jokes landed for the opening monologue. But yeah, it was quite surprising. It was the high point of the night.
See, I heard that also they had like a trio opening monologue, and then they had their own individual opening monologues, which again takes up and bloats your whole ceremony. And then I heard there was tons and tons of advertising for Disney Plus because ABC the network that was in charge, who own Disney Plus, so they like filled up loads and loads of time with adverts.
They it was another thing where they brought up something really serious, and then the next thing you know, they've cut away to Chris Evans advertising for something Marvel. That's like it's disingenuous. It's weird.
That sounded so disingenuous. It was to do with Troy Kotsur, was it? Kotsur?
His speech, yeah.
Yep. So he had a really genuine, one of the very best speeches of the night, from what I could see. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to this very wooden, congratulatory speech from Chris Evans. And then he was like, well done, Troy. Now, you can see me this summer in Lightyear, all the origin story to do with Buzz Lightyear. And it looked, I was like, is that how it was put together? Because that was terrible.
That is exactly how it was put together. Like, I think the thing to really take away from that is that the show was astonishingly messy, astonishingly boring. Yeah. And the fact that the only thing that saved the show's viewership, and you can see the spike in the viewership, the only thing that saved the show's viewership was possibly the most contentious or controversial moment in the show's history. It was a mess, to be honest.
We should probably move on to the next Oscar. And this one is one of the very biggest of the night, and that is the best director of the night, which went to Jane Campion for Power of the Dog. What did we think about this win? Because I know she was favourite to win it as well.
She was favourite to win it, and this is maybe one of the... we've spoken already before about how a lot of these awards are being given to people long after they should have won originally. She was up for The Piano 20 years ago against Steven Spielberg, who, I mean, would go on to win another one pretty soon after. And it was kind of a missed chance. The fact that the Oscars would then take, you know, another 10 years to... It was more than 10 years to go and... give a woman the first Best Director award for Kathryn Bigelow. But this time around, it's really nice in the sense that of those ones nominated, and I'd say of anyone that year, even if they're films I prefer, I think Jane Campion did the best job as a director. And it's nice that she can get both a legacy one of you should have had this years ago, but you're also getting it for doing the best job. Because, I mean, the sheer workload that's put into that between her writing, her... organizing the entire thing and directing it to create such a film that's so subtle and so subtextual. I think it's an incredible feat, and it's something that a really great director who's been working for years, I think it's a wonderful story. And also for the fact that it's the second woman in a row to win it on merit is just fantastic.
No, absolutely. Like I said, there's I think with some of the other ones we talked about, it is kind of like, oh, well, you know, they should have got it beforehand, and maybe like their performance this year wasn't as good as some of the others, but like, do you know what I mean? It's fair that they've been off. Whereas you're right, like she's actually to actually get it as sort of a consolation prize, but also in like when she's genuinely done an excellent job as well, is really, really nice.
I mean, it's like, it's the one which I would never say is like a consolation prize almost. Yeah. It's like, could you say that this is Campion's best work? I would say probably it's at least level with her other best works.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say something like, oh, is that Jessica Chastain's best performance? No, that's like, say, Zero Dark Thirty. Or, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's nice that someone's peaked and has been rewarded for it. And I think it's one of the most deserving ones of the night. It's up there with like some of the June tacky ones that, you know, you just say, right, that is the class of the field. So I'm very happy about it. And I mean, was the competition really super strong? I think Hamaguchi is fantastic, but he was never going to win just because he's not really that known. And I mean, what's the alternatives? Branagh and Spielberg, and I mean, PTA, who've all done better work in the past, like far better work in the past.
And then on to the biggest award of the night, which is Best Picture.
This is why the thing with Will Smith infuriates me so much, is this is such a historic moment for the Oscars itself, and this should have been the story that was the leading story that came out of the awards on Sunday night. And the fact that we're still talking about, we spent so long even today talking about Willard Carroll Smith II, aka the Fresh Prince, getting a wee bit hot and heavy. Like, it's ridiculous that is what came out of it, as opposed to this like truly groundbreaking film that was actually came out. And whether or not, like, I mean, Corey, we've talked with Corey about this before, and he was saying it's kind of like an okay movie, like it's a good movie, but it's not like a great movie, but it's what it represents, right? And it's the fact that it preaches the message that cinema is for everyone. And it's something that is just like, I'm really just happy that this is something that did as well as it did. And like, we're talking about like the number of movies that are in here that were first runners and all the rest of it, you really couldn't call it leading up to it. But the fact that it sort of just came in as this like nice little independent movie that sort of came in and swung from the side and took a, I think is what we really should have been talking about with regards to this. And it's just a shame that it's been overshadowed.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things about Coda is that whenever it was first pitched to be made by Sian Hedder, she wanted to use an all-deaf cast for the family, and she wanted it to be subtitled and for them to speak only in sign language, because that's what's authentic. And she got rejected for it. She put her foot down and said, no, this has to be done. And then one of the executives who worked for the production company that had asked her to make it and then rejected it, he left, and he helped get it done independently. It is essentially the little film that could. It's I mean, it's something that was rejected a few years back for not being viable, and now it's both successful and it's critically acclaimed, and it's now got golden it's got awards now to its name. So it's a really, really lovely story. It's a great narrative. I think if anything, it's more so a win for its producing and its casting, maybe more so than a film. I'll use Corey's words here, seeing as he's not here to defend himself, but he did say it was an okay film. I also agree. I think it's a good film. I think it's not anything special, and I think there's maybe some questions that are going to be answered by the deaf community about how authentic it actually is, in the sense that 50% of the film is from a hearing person's perspective. And when I ever say that, I don't mean it's the story of the deaf family. It's more, a lot of the film is just a story about her wanting to become a singer rather than the family side of things. So there's a lot of things that we can discuss about it. But it's also kind of, it's the Oscars deciding to go a bit more populist in a way. Not saying that it's like a popular film like June was, but it's just, it's a very accessible film. And I know it's pretty much by the end, it was between Coda and The Power of the Dog, which is a lot more art house. Even if weirdly, it was actually up for the thing we shouldn't really talk about, the Oscars fan favorite over Coda. Yeah, but I'm sure we can discuss that. But yeah, it is, it's pretty interesting because the Oscars is kind of the industry trying to sort of say, hey, look, this is the film we want to represent us. This is what we think is the best picture of the year, and that they've gone for something crowd pleasing rather than something maybe more artistically sound. It's pretty interesting.
I do think that they haven't went super crowd pleasing. If they really wanted to go crowd pleasing, they would have picked Dune. And I do think the films that are still being recognized over the last 10 years, most of them that win the big awards are small films. They're not massive films. But I do agree with you that maybe that, yes, it's accessible as a film. But I do think that they certainly didn't just decide to go for something very popular. And I know you've said about the popular vote, which obviously is to try and bring in a younger fan base, basically, into the Oscars, which I don't think has worked, or at least has backfired a bit, because you've just got these Twitter groups, rallies, that have basically come together to try and get whatever film Twitter wants at the time that the vote's being taken at. So I don't know if you'll see the populist folks staying, but
I hope not.
I think I don't think it's a good idea.
Everyone can basically agree that Twitter at this point is just a sewer, and I don't think there's any merit in having. I can see why it's nice because they're trying to but it's almost like they're appeasing the trolls by putting stuff like that in, and it's like I don't think you need to sort of.
Should we say you who don't actually need to won the populist vote inside? For anyone who hasn't found out? So in third place, for the most popular film of the year. Was a Johnny Depp film
that no one has seen.
That no one's seen. I don't even know the name of it.
I don't even know if it exists. Is the question? It's called Minamata, and it's like it was essentially a vote for a certain subsection of people who like Johnny Depp still in the year 2022. Whoever those people are. Yeah.
And then you had another subsection of Twitter that voted for Amazon Cinderella that won second place.
Yeah, which is people who liked Fifth Harmony, essentially.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
And then the number one place went to Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, which was absolute trash. I watched that film and couldn't finish it because it was that bad.
I'm going to disagree with you very strongly on that. I think that, well, we've had lengthy discussions about this movie. I think I love that movie. I think it's a really nice fun.
Did you vote
movie.
For Zack Snyder, Ross? Are you part of the problem?
I maybe am part of the toxic Snyderverse stands, if you will, but that's my choice and my choice alone, Mark.
Actually, can we talk about how it was actually a Snyder clean sweep? Because there was the other populist vote, which was the greatest moment in all of cinema history. Which was one.
I didn't even know it was. I thought it was for the year, for all time.
It was all time. That's why it was like fifth place was The Matrix. And then the greatest moment in all of cinema history, which we now know objectively voted for by the people, so we can't even fight this, is The Flash running.
Why?
What a disaster, Oscars. What a disaster. I just think there's no thought that goes into these changes. Like, every change they've made has been a terrible decision. I don't know who at the top is making these decisions and went, actually, just opening it up to the Twitter, people on Twitter, is that a smart idea? Are we going to get a good film being, getting voted for? I mean, I could have told you that was a bad idea.
So, back to Best Picture. I was going to say, I think it's pretty interesting that between Power of the Dog and Coda, I mean, Coda was nominated for 3 Oscars. It took all 3 of its wins. It won Adapted Screenplay, Supporting Actor, and Best Picture in the end. And then you had Power of the Dog at the other end of the scale. It had 12 nominations, and it picked up 1 win for Director. I mean, it's pretty rare that you see a film with that many nominations go home that empty-handed. And I think it sort of speaks to how what was supposed to be the fight of the Oscars kind of came down to in the end. Between Power of the Dog starting off really strong, being really popular with every different category, and then Coda coming in really late, not really getting much attention, but capturing the audience in a way that, or capturing the voters in a way that the Power of the Dog couldn't.
Sorry, Alex, just one thing on that, actually.
Yes.
I think that's why I changed my decision on who the best pitcher was going to be, because I think there was enough people that probably really disliked, or at least really didn't like, Power of the Dog. And because it's a ranking system for the best picture, mm-hmm. I think that there will be a part of the voter base will have put that at the very back end. And I think Coda was probably like 2, 3 on a lot of people's ranking. And as a result, ended up coming top because Power of the Dog lost from so many negative rankings from people. That's my prediction.
You saw that actually happen a lot in the past with Spotlight winning over The Big Short and The Revenant, which were more so favorites, but they were a lot more divisive. So they just kind of split their vote a little bit, and Spotlight was always maybe second, third, fourth in the vote, and that went on. One of the things that surprised me a lot, though, is that, I mean, Power of the Dog really, its conversion rate is really surreal to see as well, because, I mean, it had shots in a lot of different places. And even on the night, it looked like maybe it could have won cinematography, which, I mean, if I can rant ever so slightly, June won it. June looks beautiful. June also was shot over 50 weeks in a desert with 5 cameras, 3 of which probably don't even exist before June was made. It had all the money in the world, all the lenses in the world, 250 people working on it. And if things went tits up, they could have just gone to an effects house and say, yeah, throw some money at that, make it look better. And then you got Ari Wegner, who's winning, or well, she was winning the Odd Award and then just kind of petered out towards the end. She shot Power of the Dog on nowhere near the same budget and made a film that looks every bit as good, if not better. So it's pretty interesting. I think one of the stories of the night, I mean, you could compare it to this, Ari Wegner. She did this small film. She did an amazing job. She goes out, she does all this. She gets women put on the map in an area which isn't very, there are loads of female directors of photography out there, but not a lot are spoken about as much as they should be. Not a lot are awarded as much as they should be. There's still never been an Oscar winner for a woman cinematographer in cinematography. So there's this really fascinating story about women filmmakers in a smaller film. And then what gets taken out of the way is just something really big, something really loud, Greg Fraser winning it for June. And I think one of the most interesting articles I read about the Oscars was talking about how Coda got overshadowed by, Coda and Jane Campion as well, actually being overshadowed by the Will Smith incident. You had the third woman director to win. You had a woman in Shan Heder winning both picture and screenplay for a small film that she fought like hell to win. Those are two of amazing stories that the Oscars should have really been about. And in the end, what happens? It's all about males being big and loud and violent.
Well, guys, I think we've fairly dissected just about every part of the night itself. So I think we've definitely laid a good smackdown on the overall 94th Academy. I'm sorry. God. We've laid a smackdown onto the night of the 94th Academy Awards. Hopefully we'll not be getting into any similar entanglements ever again on the main stage, but we'll wait and see. Thank you, Alex, for coming on, having a chat with us again about this.
It was a great podcast. It was great.
Really, really great podcast. The three of us have had an absolute laugh and a half tonight. And so this is it for the season. We'll be back hopefully what time, Mark? Sometime in May, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, in the meantime, by all means, go out and check out as many of these movies as possible. Maybe download some of Will Smith's earlier work to see what he used to be like as a human being. And for anyone else, like and follow us on all of our social medias and everything else. And in the meantime, keep watching movies, and we'll be back soon. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.